Chapter 19. Little Knife. Strike. Parry. Guard. Standing inside her bedchamber, Kofi blinked the sweat from her eyes, ignoring its sting, as she tried to hold the practice sword in her hands upright. She didn't much care for the thing. It was old, heavy, and dull. But she gritted her teeth as she watched Nijiri across the room. The girl was sitting on a divan with her hand raised, signaling for her to wait. Go. Kofi closed her eyes at once, summoning the splendor with a practiced ease. She opened her eyes and watched as the practice sword's blade took on an illuminated golden quality, as though she dipped it in sunshine. She felt the thrum of energy as it moved through her, flowing in a perfect cycle from her hands to the wooden blade and back again. She looked up at Nijiri and nodded. Advance. Kofi needed no further prompt. She lunged forward, ready to execute her first combination with the sword. Strike. Parry. Guard. In her hands, the splendor in the wood flickered as she executed each move, but Kofi ignored it as she transitioned to her second combination. Strike. Parry. Pivot. The sword flickered again, but Kofi gritted her teeth, running forward. There was one more combination, one more to get this right. Strike. Parry. The blade in her hand went dim as the splendor faded suddenly, and Kofi shuddered as the energy left the wood and returned to her. For several seconds, she just stared at the dulled sword, furious, speechless. You're not concentrating. From the divan, Nijiri shook her head. You're too focused on the way you think you look when you move. It's like you're trying to appear as though you know the steps instead of just knowing the steps. The assessment stung, but Kofi tempered her embarrassment and returned to the middle of the bedchamber. I want to go again. All right, said Nijiri. Take your position. Kofi automatically spread her feet apart and bent her knees, bracing herself. Go. This time, Kofi was quicker. She barely had time to think about it as she summoned the splendor and felt an onslaught of it run through the bones in her arms to illuminate the sword. She took a deep breath as she prepared to repeat her first combination. Strike, parry, guard. The wood dimmed again, this time without the warning flicker. When Kofi threw the sword to the ground with more force than strictly necessary, Nijiri's brows rose. I didn't teach you that move. It's hopeless. Kofi crossed the room and let herself flop onto her bed. I can't do this. When she looked up, Nijiri was standing over her with her arms crossed. So that's it? The girl asked. You're going to give up on everything, just like that? I'm not getting it, said Kofi angrily. I'm getting worse, not better. Kofi and Nijiri had been working in her bedchamber for the better part of the last 3 hours. Kofi still wasn't able to use splendor blades to push her own splendor through an empty hilt, but she now knew how to push the splendor into an existing blade, so she'd made do with what she had. Now, though, she pressed the heels of her palms into her eyes. I don't understand, she heard Nijiri say. You've not even had the chance to train that long. Why are you putting this unreasonable amount of pressure on yourself to be perfect? Because I have to be. Kofi sat up again. There was more anger in her voice than she intended, but she couldn't temper it. She lowered her voice, but only slightly. Because every day that I don't get this right is a day we're still here. It's a day when one of us could be caught by Fedu. It won't let that happen. Something shifted in Jiri's eyes. Kofi, she said softly. I have to get this right, Kofi said, deliberately speaking over her. I'm tired of being weak. I'm tired of not being able to do anything. I'm tired of... Kofi. Nijiri raised her voice slightly. Her tone had become more severe. Listen to me, she said firmly. What happened to Zola? She trailed off a moment. You can't blame yourself for that. Kofi heard the words, but she couldn't absorb them. It had been 3 days since Zola's death, since the night of the Ichisonga. But the memories from it were still painted in Kofi's mind, with too vivid color. She saw that terrible beast, Fedu's smile, Zola's face. Something in her broke all over again when she thought of the way Zola had run into the Mistwood, into her own death. If I had learned more quickly, her voice was thick when she spoke. If I'd gotten us out of here more quickly. No. Najiri shook her head. The fault for Zola's death starts and stops with Fedu. Don't carry that guilt. It doesn't belong to you. She moved to sit down beside Kofi on the bed. I'm going to tell you something, she said. Something I've not told anyone before. Kofi looked up. What? How I came to be in Thornkeep, said Najiri softly. It's not a nice story. She picked at several loose threads on her sleeve before speaking again. You guessed right the first time you met me. I'm Beridian, but I'm not from any of the big cities. My family lived in a rural town, in the Ningazi Ranges. She stared past Kofi, as though remembering it. It wasn't a very big community, but it was tight-knit, so everyone knew each other. We all looked out for one another. Life was good, she frowned. Until the shaman came. The shaman? Kofi repeated. That's what he called himself. Najiri's mouth twisted as though she'd tasted something bitter. It was clever. No one in a village like mine had heard of such a person. In he comes with his sweeping robes and painted cowrie shells on his neck, talking of gods and power. He was like a colorful new bird everyone wanted to look at. At first, it was harmless enough. He helped people, made ointments and salves for the afflicted, crafted toys for the children. Over time, people came to accept him, but I never did. I never trusted him. My parents didn't understand it, but I always felt there was something off about him. He made me uncomfortable. Then I started getting sick. Kofi watched as the girl who always looked so strong hugged herself and shivered. Her eyes were far away, remembering. I've never felt so bad in my life. I was feverish every day, achy, hallucinating. I even lost my sense of smell and taste. My parents were convinced that I was going to die, but the shaman said that he could help me. He offered to take me to a city far away where there was medicine that could cure me. I begged my parents not to let him take me, pleaded, but they thought it was best. I suppose they truly thought it was the selfless thing to do. She blinked and seemed to come out of a trance. She met Kofi's gaze and held it. I never saw them again. Kofi felt numb. And you never tried to leave? To escape? Najiri threw her a cynical look, somewhat returning to her normal self. Of course I did, she said. In the early years, I must have tried 100 times. He caught me every time. And once he realized that I wasn't strong enough to aid his great endeavor, he didn't mind punishing me either. She held up her arms, and for the first time, Kofi noticed her scars. They were striped across Najiri's dark skin, pink and shiny in the candlelight. Kofi recognized them instantly. Only a whip or crop could leave that sort of permanent mark. She shivered. I did give up eventually, Najiri went on. Kofi's heart fell. I'm so sorry, Najiri. Najiri shrugged. It was a casual gesture, but one that didn't quite meet the Diraj's eyes. My story isn't unique, she said resignedly. And it probably isn't even the worst. You ask most of the Diraj's in Thornkeep, and they'll tell you similar stories of a mysterious stranger showing up in their city or village and luring them away. It's how we got most of us. Kofi thought back to something in the jungle. Adia. There'd been a moment, right after they'd found each other, in which Adia had told her some piece of her truth about how she'd been tricked into creating the rupture that destroyed Lycosa because of Fedu's trickery. The thought made her ill. How many innocent children had Fedu taken over the years, destroyed the way he'd destroyed Adia? I'm sorry. She wanted to say more, but it was all she could think to say. Don't be sorry, said Najiri. There was a new ferocity in her voice. Be angry. Not for me, but for the other Dorajas, for Zola, for all the ones like her that we don't know about. She poked Kofi hard in the chest. They're the reason you can't give up. You're the first real chance we've ever had of leaving this place forever. You're the best of us. Kofi winced.
I don't feel like the best of anything.
Najiri paused for a moment. I want to show you something. She rose and crossed the room again to get something from her bag, looking over her shoulder conspiratorially. Close your eyes. Kofi obeyed. She listened as Najiri's footsteps returned to her as she sat down on the bed again and put something in Kofi's hands. Okay, you can open them. Kofi looked down, and her heart started in her chest. She recognized the simple Hanjari dagger. It wasn't fancy or jeweled, but there was a name carved into its hilt. Asafa Okojo. Okojo. Ekon had given her his dagger back in Lakosa. She'd woken up in Thornkeep without it, figured it had been discarded. Now, she held the blade up. It looked the same, but she could tell it had been refurbished, carefully cleaned and sharpened. Tears welled in her eyes. I found it in the forge, said Najiri, the day before yesterday. It turns out, Fedu had given it to Zola to destroy, but she'd kept it, cleaned it. I think she'd planned to give it to you. Kofi thought back to the first time she'd met Zola in the forge. The girl had mentioned then that she was working on a surprise, but Kofi had forgotten. The tears fell freely now. Najiri put her hand over Kofi's, and for several seconds, the girl sat there, not saying anything at all. Eventually, it was Najiri who broke the silence. I want you to know something, Kofi, she murmured. Fedu gains his power by making others feel small, by making them forget that they are powerful. Don't let him do that to you. I don't care what he calls you. You are not his little knife. You are no man's tool. You are your own weapon. The words reverberated through Kofi in a swell. She heard the echo of them in her mind, the start of a mantra. I am no man's tool. I am my own weapon. Come on. At once, Najiri was on her feet. I want to show you something else. Kofi rose with her. Is it another drill? Because I really don't think I can. We're done with drills for today, said Najiri, shaking her head. There was a glint in her eyes. I'm going to teach you something new. Kofi had had every intention of going to sleep after Najiri left her that night, but she didn't. Instead, she went to the library. She did her best to walk on the balls of her feet as she made her way there, keenly aware of how quiet Thornkeep became when the sun descended and its Daraja residents retired for the evening. For the first time, she realized she did not know where Fedu slept, if he slept at all. She brushed away a shiver at the thought of how he might occupy his nights. Soon enough, the library's doors rose to meet her, and a feeling like relief passed over her as she carefully cracked one door and walked through. A part of her almost found it funny. Growing up, she'd never really liked reading or books, a fact Ekon had been mortified by. But now that had changed. Fedu's library, macabre as it was, held answers, information, things she needed. Besides that, there was a peace about this place, unlike any other on these grounds. She sighed. She'd been coming to this library for weeks now, looking for anything she could find about her order, the Order of Vivuli, without luck. There was no reason to think tonight's search would be any different, but Najiri's words stayed with her. I don't care what he calls you. You are not his little knife. You are no man's tool. If she was going to be her own weapon, the person to lead the Dorajas out of Thornkeep once and for all, she couldn't give up, even on something as small as this. As always, she moved to the shelves on her right first, the ones about Ashosen history, and she began to run her fingers along the old book's spines. It was unlikely that she'd find anything useful here, but she had to exercise her due diligence and look over every one of the library's sections. She carefully skimmed the next one,
volumes on medical science and anatomy, then another, botany and complex biology. She was about to move on to the biographies when she stopped short. Something on the very bottom shelf of the biology section caught her eye. A book, touched just right by a beam of moonlight shining through one of the library's windows. It was sticking out slightly from the others, as though it had been jammed in somewhere it didn't really fit. Without thinking, Kofi pulled it from the shelf to examine it. She saw now why she'd missed it, why anyone browsing these shelves would have missed it. The book was small, colored a dark, fading blue, and the writing on both its spine and cover was illegible. Carefully, she opened it, flinching when its binding crackled. The ink on its title page was nearly translucent, but she could just discern the words, penned in a neat calligraphic font. Through the Ages, an account of historic Darajas. Kofi's mouth went dry as she stared at the words, as they sunk in. With trembling fingers, she flipped the first yellowed page, and on the next found a table of contents. In bolder words, she read Order of Aquilae, followed by a list of about 20 names. She skipped several more pages until she stopped on one featuring more of the meticulous typeface beside the printed image of a woman. She wore her hair short and had a jovial look about her eyes. Kofi read the text beside her. Name, Syra. Status, deceased. Order, Aquilae. Affinity, able to read minds. Notes, none. Kofi's heart skipped a beat as she turned more pages, stopping on another face and name. This time, there was a young boy named Kafele pictured, another Daraja from the Order of Aquilae. Per this book, he was dead, but he'd been a powerful illusionist like Zane, able to hypnotize masses. One by one, Kofi browsed the pages. There was a section here for notable individuals within each of the five noble Daraja orders. Kofi knew she shouldn't have been surprised, but her heart fell when she got to the end of the book and saw there was no section for the Order of Vivuli. But of course not. Zane had said himself that the Order of Vivuli wasn't even formally recognized by most scholars. She was just about to return the book to its place on the shelf when she noticed something else, a dog ear on its last page, bent as though to bookmark it. Slowly, she cracked the book open again, squinting in the dark. The handwriting on this last page was different from the rest, roughly scrawled, but she stiffened as she read its words. Order of Vivuli, lest they be forgotten. There were no pictures next to the names on this single page, but Kofi read them hungrily. Her eyes skimmed over the first one. It read, Name, Mansa, Stormbringer. Status, deceased. Order, Vivuli. Affinity, able to summon lightning and thunder at will. Notes, favored by the god Atuno. Kofi read over the text once, twice, a second time. It was almost a surreal feeling. She desperately wanted to know about other Darajas like her, and now she had proof of not just one, but several. She kept reading, so fast the words blurred on the page. After Mansa's name was a passage about a Daraja called Onaje, who'd been able to speak to the dead. He was no longer alive, nor was the next Daraja, a woman called Winta, who'd been able to see into the past using objects taken from it. Kofi sighed. These people, these Darajas, were long gone now. But seeing their names reminded her that they'd once existed, and that made her feel less alone. Her eyes dropped down to the last two names on the list, and she read them over slowly. The first was a Daraja named Sigidi, a seer with the ability to see the future. His whereabouts were unknown, but his status was listed as alive. She started. Below his name was the last Daraja on the list. Kofi read her note twice. Name, Akande. Status, unknown. Order, Vivuli. Affinity, able to use the splendor as a compass. Notes, last seen in Chini. Kofi's mouth popped open. She couldn't believe what she was seeing. Able to use the splendor as a compass. That sounded almost exactly like her affinity. She sat back a moment, wrapping her head around the implications of it. Was it possible there was another Daraja somewhere out there? Someone with the same affinity as her? Someone like that could teach her better than anyone else. She read the passage again. Status unknown. Notes. Last seen in Chini. There was no guarantee Akande was still alive, but there was no guarantee they were definitely dead. If, once she got out of Thornkeep, she could find this Akande person, somehow she might be able to... She froze when she heard a sound several yards away from her, near the library's doors. Footsteps. And panic flitted through her body. She had not closed the door, only cracked it. And now she could distinctly hear two sets of nearing footsteps. She silently swore. On the one hand, she wasn't technically doing anything wrong. If she was caught here, there wasn't much anyone could do except send her back to her bedchamber. But on the other hand, it was very likely that her whereabouts would be reported back to Fedu if the wrong person caught her. She didn't need the god scrutinizing her actions any more than he already was. Slowly, she rose, hugging the little blue book to her chest as she crept forward. A sliver of yellow light permeated the darkness from the doorway, and she moved toward it as quietly as she could manage. She had a few options from here. She could try to close the door before anyone came close enough to notice it was open, then wait for them to pass. Or, if she was quick enough, she could slip out entirely and make a run for it. Neither option was ideal. She was inches from the doors now. But the two sets of footsteps were louder, closer. She tensed as she reached the library's doors and peeked with one eye out into the corridor. Two male Darajas were walking away from her down the hall. She couldn't see their faces, but from their respective purple and red tunics, she gathered that one was from the Order of Kumbambana and the other from the Order of Muili. They were chortling, distracted. Good. They would be down the hall in a few seconds, and she'd have time to leave the library unnoticed. In the hall's quiet, their voices carried.
You're sure? The one in the red tunic asked. You heard him?
Kofi watched as the Daraja in purple nodded.
I didn't hear it myself.
But Gamba did.
He said Fedu will be ready to move forward soon. At once, Kofi froze.
I thought he was waiting for Kofi, said Red Tunic.
Waiting for her to figure out her affinity or something?
I don't think Fedu cares, said Purple Tunic.
I heard him talking the other night. He's getting impatient.
Well, I won't be sorry when he does decide it's time for us to leave, said Red Tunic. I've been ready to go. I'm sick of seeing the same girls.
Their chortles echoed down the hall well after they'd turned the corner and disappeared. But Kofi stayed where she was. Her heart was thundering in her chest, so hard her ribcage ached. One boy's words echoed in her mind. Fedu will be ready to move forward soon. She knew it then. It was time to leave Thornkeep.